Labor Radio is with Chuck Puckmeyer. He is running for the nomination for the NDP in New Westminster. Welcome to Labor Radio, Chuck.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Chuck, can you give us a little bit of a background on what you're doing today, a little bit about yourself?
Well, I'm a city councillor for New Westminster. I've been on there for going into 9 years now. I've always been active in my community. Ever since I was quite young, co-founded a residents association, worked on the crime issues on 12th Street, and so I've been very active with the food bank and unemployment action centers, and with my union, culminating in eventually being elected business agent there.
Are you still involved in your union?
I'm not in that capacity right now. I'm still employed by Molson Brewery, as well as I work as a city councillor as well.
So what made you decide to run for the NDP nomination in New Westminster?
Well, I've been looking at the direction this province has been going in the last little while, and I think Victoria needs a strong voice from New Westminster again, and we need to put our message across and educate our citizens and work with our citizens to get the communities that we deserve.
What kind of education are we talking about?
Well, right now it's very difficult to reach out and really show the citizens what's happening in this province. The media is fairly controlled right now. The government is using millions of dollars of taxpayers' money basically promoting the future. A lot of their ads talk about 2010 and 2015. These are all statistics that were around 5 and 10 years ago, but certainly weren't used by the government of the day to promote something that really hasn't happened yet. So I think we need to educate the people and show them what is really happening with their tax dollars. Their tax dollars are being used to mislead them to re-elect, in my opinion, the worst government this province has ever had.
Regarding education, just recently this issue came up before New Westminster City Council with respect to school buildings in New Westminster for New Westminster Secondary School, and the council had quashed a motion for building something with respect to that school. Can you speak on that a little bit?
Absolutely, and I wasn't at the vote that actually pulled the rug out from underneath the school board. I think there's a lot of politics being played right now in New Westminster with the sort of the liberal slate, I guess you could call it, or the non-left slate, and trying to keep, in my opinion, trying to keep the member of the legislature in power. And they are not allowing the school board to do the job that they were elected to do. Council should not be interfering with them. They should have the right, as any other developer has the right, to come to council, at the very least for first reading on a development proposal. And then we need to listen to the public and have an open mind and an open hearing and listen to the public speak, and after that we decide whether we go forward or whether we don't support the initiative. This initiative itself is fraught with some problems. One is an ideological problem of the school board selling what is they consider right now as surplus lands and using that land to assist the province in doing what the province is supposed to do, and that's fund building schools. So there are some issues there, but we still need to listen to the public to ensure that the children of New Westminster get the school that, not that they need, but that they deserve. And that's a first-class quality school with all the services that are currently being offered and possibly expansion of those services.
So was there a proper consultation with the public by the City Council for that?
Absolutely not. There's been some letters to the editor. Same old people are writing letters to the editor. You know, the Christian Center is an example. The Christian Center was also, the same people were writing letters to the editor in opposition to putting a congregate care home on the Christian Center site because of the heritage designation of the land. The public meeting showed that the people that were writing letters to the editor showed up. The heritage community showed up. But over 100, if not 150 seniors and people that live in New Westminster that wanted that care home built so that they had somewhere to go and retire in the city with dignity. And then this is for, mind you, for people who have some disposable assets. This isn't 100% subsidized living, but also it puts it takes some pressure off the others. So there's an example that we need to listen to the public and not just read a few letters to the editor and listen to some counselors that are saying the community is overwhelmed in opposition.
Right. Thanks for your comments on that, Chuck. Now let's go back to your nomination. What makes you think that you're a good candidate for the nomination for New Westminster?
Well, I think my track record on council is an example. I've stood up for the principles of working people and working families, seniors, students, the youth, and I think those tools will transfer over quite well for the community, and I can be that same voice in the province.
So what do you think of the current Liberal government and where they're going?
Atrocious. I didn't imagine that this government would be like this. I didn't imagine that they would promise not to rip up collective agreements and come in and tear up collective agreements. I didn't imagine that they would gouge the labor board, youth services for trying to get children out of the prostitution field. Our youth center, New Westminster, fell short $50,000 in funding, and this is after the city even has been putting money in it. It's now been demolished. This is our at-risk youth center. And so it's been a very heartless government. Tax cuts for the upper income people and just extra costs for lower income. There's been more homeless, there's been more crime. And so this is not the kind of government that is conducive to long-term viability of an economy.
The BC Liberals just announced an extra $70 a month for disability clients receiving DD2 benefits. What is your opinion of that? Was that a good thing for them to do?
Wow. You know, first they slash and burn, and then they throw you some crumbs just before an election. I don't think people are going to fall for that. I think people are going to see through that. There are a lot of little things being offered right now. But if you read the fine print, you know, they're long term and they don't even come close to what's been taken away. So I think people need to be wary when you see crumbs thrown down to the poor.
Okay, if elected, how do you propose to remain accountable to the people that elect you?
I think that's your goal, and it's not only accountable to the people that elect you, it's accountable to your principles, and it's accountable to the vision that you have going in. Some people may not vote for you, but you still have to work for them as a member of the legislature. So I will continue to believe in what I believe in and work hard for all of my constituents.
Right now, Joyce Murray has little coffee get-togethers with her members, or the members that elect her, and would you do similar things yourself?
You know, what she does is sort of, you know, she shows up at places with short notice. She showed up at council. She's even showed up to question her own ministry staff and transportation, trying to get a news headline, basically abusing the council chamber for her own promotion. She's having meetings at the Westminster Club with, or the Royal Tower is one of the places with, parachuting in a minister or the premier at one time. But you know, some of these events you have to pay to go to. I think it's $10 or $20, cash only, it says in the ad. Well, there are a lot of people that have questions of these ministers and premiers and questions of our MLA, and they don't have the $20 to go to this breakfast meeting. So I think her audience that she's trying to attract is fairly selective, and the timing that she does it and where she does it. You can't have a large meeting. We need to have public forums.
One of the issues that was a real hot potato for her was St. Mary's Hospital. And if I recall right, she jumped into meetings, just like you said, parachuted herself into meetings. I was at those meetings. And she tried to say that, oh, you know, she was trying to stop the sale of St. Mary's and whatnot. But really, what is your position on St. Mary's Hospital being demolished and being rebuilt as these two towers?
Well, as chair of the Heritage Commission, we are dealing with it at this time, and there has been a heritage evaluation of the building. Personally, my personal opinion, without exposing myself to a violation of the public process, seems like a very good building, very solid building. There are a lot of needs in the community. There are student housing needs, there's senior housing needs, there are affordable housing needs. And I'm very shocked that the sisters sold that property so quickly without consultation with the city on what our needs may be after years of foregoing taxes on that property. So I'm very concerned. With respect to Joyce Murray, I thought she was going to cross the floor and join Jenny and Joy. You know, the way she was talking about, you know, there's going to be a solution for St. Mary's and it's going to be in the medical field. Well, none of that has happened. That was just lip service to the citizens of New Westminster.
Right. St. Mary's, I think it sold for $4 million. Or less than that, I don't know. The actual building was evaluated to be somewhere around $30 million. Is that not the case?
Well, I did print off the forms, and I found that the actual St. Mary's site is even smaller than the Christian Center site. But it sold for, in my opinion, way less than it was worth. It was the sisters wanted out of there quickly, and they did so by basically a fire sale to Boza. We weren't even aware until after the fact, and that really bothers me in the community.
Yes, they seem to have washed their hands completely of this issue. On another issue, provincial, what is your position on the privatization of the government payroll services and the MSP?
Well, anytime you do something of that nature, you risk losing security of information. I'm very concerned whether it goes to the United States or to another country. That is important information, and we've seen so many breaches, accidental breaches, that it really concerns me that our information could become global public knowledge, and that's difficult. The cost savings to such a move aren't there. With Chapter 11 of NAFTA, once you give that service away, even a government, it's very difficult to ever get it back. And once your contract, if it's 2 or 3 or 5 years, once the rate expires, the sky's the limit. And we could end up paying more now for that service than we were paying. We could end up paying more then than we're paying now for that service.
If elected, member of the legislature, and if the NDP is elected government, do you consider proposing or supporting putting these things back into the public sector and paying the fines and penalties that NAFTA would levy on you?
Well, you know, now we're starting to head into a fairly national issue, and I think on a national scale, NAFTA needs to be renegotiated. It's not working for Canada; it's working for the United States. I sense there will be some problems going that route, but that we need to focus towards that, and we need to work towards that, and see how we would be able to bring that back to have the citizens take ownership of that again.
It's very interesting on NAFTA how in the United States the Democrats are also opposed to NAFTA because a lot of their jobs, of the manufacturing industry jobs, have gone to Mexico. And so the United States in some ways is also losing in respect to NAFTA. And it seems that it's not a very fair agreement for both the United States and Canada from a laborer's point of view, but it seems to work really well for the corporations and the rich. What's your comment on that?
Well, absolutely, and this is the interesting thing about it, is that it's one of the few avenues that someone can contract into and never have to have competition again. Once a corporation owns the rights to all of our documents, They don't even have to periodically put that up to tender to see if there's a fair price. The sky's the limit. They own it. And that exceeds anything, even in the business community. That absolutely exceeds the right to competition, or other than taking over the corporation that owns that contract. There's no way anyone else can get their hands on that contract. So why wouldn't they exploit it? You know, look at Enron, look at some of the companies that have exploited, citizens already. It'll happen there. It seems to be a natural form of business. Maximize your profits at all costs. And we are the ones that are going to pay the price. Plus, we're going to lose good paying jobs in exchange, which sustain your community.
Yeah, that's right. And that's a big issue with Labor Radio and its listeners, is that a lot of our jobs are being contracted out for lower wages, lower benefits, and it definitely affects our communities in which we live, because we don't have the tax dollars and the tax base now to support the things we need, like firefighters and policemen and that sort of thing that we need in order to build a sustainable community. And if we keep contracting out, we'll end up having nothing left except to, like the United States now. If you look at their situation, their budget situation, they've cut taxes and they've contracted out so much, they've basically got wastelands left. And big Walmart's on the corner, is the only store on the street.
Well, a good example of contracting out, I think, is the food services and the cleaning services in the hospitals. And I was recently in for a minor procedure, which ended up in 10 days with a serious staph infection. And the filth that I saw in the hospitals was unbelievable. And I feel sorry even for the people that have been hired, because, they need work. They're working for minimum wage. They're not trained. There are fewer of them than before, so they're absolutely run ragged, and they really don't have the guidance to do the job properly. There are no microbiology skills, no adequate skills. Doctors warning you not to step on the floor in emergency without shoes on. Getting out of bed in the morning and basically walking out of your slippers because they stick to the floor. From dirty mops. It was absolutely filthy what I saw in there. And what's happening now is that the contractor, because there's so few people that are doing the job, is maximizing the profit. The contractor is pocketing that money, whether it's an investment corporation or offshore or somewhere in Alberta. They're taking that person's wages that used to go to the barber shop and to the bank and to the corner grocery store, and it's being spent in another country, while we use social services to try to assist those that lost their employment. It's a lose-lose. And the only people benefiting, like you said, are the investment community.
Yeah, it's like the old saying, act locally but think globally. And right now, globally, they're sucking our money out of our pockets and taking them offshore. Yeah, I totally agree with you. What is your position on BC Hydro? Currently, they're breaking up the hydro monopoly. They're trying to and sell off bits and pieces of it. What's your position on that?
Well, my position on any of that, selling assets, it's wrong. Those belong to the people of British Columbia. They don't belong to for a government to give tax cuts to wealthy people and then sell off our assets so that they can balance the books. You don't sell a railway to buy an election. And so the direction is absolutely wrong. Under the NDP, when we had we made $1 billion off hydro, we balanced the books, and the pundits from the other side were saying, oh yeah, but they got $1 billion from hydro, windfall from selling electricity. Well, if you didn't own hydro, where would that windfall go? It would go to the investors on the stock market that would get higher dividends, and the province would be $1 billion in the hole. You couldn't profit from it. So why would you sell an asset that can make money to offset costs of government? That's a bad decision.
I know that as a city councilor, you voted to keep New Westminster Electrical in public hands. It's still run by the city of New Westminster. How was that vote won?
Well, the resolution from the former mayor a councillor were sort of looking at some save. They thought there would be some savings there to contract out the billing services. And what we experienced when the tenders came in, they weren't that much lower than what we were actually. One of them was even higher than what we were already paying, and we're paying, you know, good paying union jobs. And so the resolution passed, and then I reintroduced it using the NAFTA argument, and staff looked at it, and staff came back with concerns that within the end of the contract we would be paying more to do that work. So the council reversed their position on it.
That's great. Hear, hear. Thank you very much for that, Chuck. In that vein, how would you work to keep public services public?
We have to keep them public at all costs. We have to maintain our assets properly. There has to be value for the money or for the investment. If we have 50 jobs servicing rail cars in British Columbia, even though that's a cost to keep the asset rolling properly, those are jobs that pay taxes and money goes back into the economy. So we need to not only keep those jobs, we need to make sure that those jobs also become efficient, and we need to look at other contracts to do rail servicing for other companies. So I absolutely support keeping those jobs. What, you know, the odd year you may lose money, but at the end of the day, in 99 years, you know, that's a multi-billion dollar rail bed, for instance, the rail bed, and our great-great-grandchildren will still own that. You know, you can't risk taking those things away.
No, you can't. I had interviewed Jagra Brar. He's the now new MLA for Surrey Panorama, and he is involved in developing small businesses, helping entrepreneurs get things going. What's your position with small business?
Well, you know, small business creates about 80% of the employment. You know, it's not big business that creates all the jobs. Big businesses are usually fairly efficient, use all the modern technologies to have small workforces. Small businesses are hard-working people. They employ a lot of people. And eventually small businesses become big businesses, and as they profit and as they start to produce more, they can pay more, they can start giving benefits and decent wages. So small business is a very key component in any community.
Yeah, and they keep all the money that is generated by small business, all the income is spent here in BC because the money stays here, as opposed to big business whose money, like we just said earlier, goes offshore. We don't know where it goes, it ends up anywhere. Yes, I totally agree with you. Thanks, Chuck. If in power with an NDP government, would you fix the labor code?
Well, absolutely. I mean, the pendulum of fairness has swung away, and you know, we need people to be able to democratically organize on their job sites without fear of intimidation, without fear of termination. We need officers that intervene immediately if the intimidation happens, and we need to have a balanced labor code that represents workers fairly and represents employers fairly. And you know, we were heading that way under the previous government. Even some of the business community weren't that concerned about where the labor code was going, and so we've seen a sharp right turn on it, and that concerns me greatly, because what happens then is you have fewer decent paying jobs, and again less money for the economy, and a greater cost of services that the government needs to provide for those that fall through those cracks.
And what about the $6 an hour training wage? What's your position there?
Just like they say, $6 sucks. You know, I mean, that is just ludicrous. When you look at the business practices of some corporations, fast food chains, and some big box stores, it's they'll take advantage of that. They'll have you in there for the whole training period time, and then, you know, they'll terminate you, or they'll move you on to another position, and you start your probation all over again, which is the case in a Walmart employee that's approached me. And so, you know, living in the Lower Mainland in British Columbia, where it's where there's very high rents, very high real estate costs, very little land left, it's very expensive to live here. $8 an hour isn't even enough to live here. And so to now go to $6, how can a young person live on $6 an hour? They can't. They have to stay at home. And so it's not helping them get out into the world and fending for themselves. It's basically, you know, throwing them some crumbs while they're working for nothing, really.
Right. What about WCB? The Liberals have really cut back on the WCB and they've watered down the legislation. Would you be able to go in there and fix that if you were in power?
Well, you have to. The Workers' Compensation Board, you know, they're again, they're like the American meat industry, where they started looking at self-regulation, thinking that there was an advantage to self-regulation. I think in the American meat industry, chances of getting inspected are once in 150 years or something. And so WCB's working the same way. They've cut a lot of their frontline investigators and inspectors. The appeals process, which they said they were streamlining, hasn't been streamlined at all. They've cut a few of the adjudicators, and they've cut a lot of the vice chairs, I think they're called, and that's just created a huge backlog again. So they're making money off payroll taxes and off employer taxes, and they're not putting it where it needs to be, and that's to sustain the Workers' Compensation Board, so it's there for workers.
Do you think that's part of the reason why they now say they have a budget surplus, is the monies that they're saving from not actually providing services?
Well, you know, the service cuts over the last few years has certainly helped create a surplus, or create that. The enormous tax cuts they had at first, you know, certainly didn't help balance any books. But they seem to have a plan from the onset that, you know, they would sell some assets and cut back on all sorts of government services and jobs and rip up collective agreements. And so there's no doubt that what they've done has basically funded their surplus, and now they're boasting that it's their, you know, their prudent government that has created the surplus. Really, they've taken it from us, and now they're throwing it back to us in little pieces and bits. I think they've hired something like 13,000 workers in social services and health. Well, those are workers that they've already terminated. 40% of the frontline workers in social services lost their jobs. And now they're saying, oh yeah, I guess it was too deep, we need to hire some back. So, you know, they're showing us a truly false economy here.
Yeah, along with throwing us bits and pieces of leftovers, I guess, from their dinner plates, they're using public money to advertise these little crumbs that they're giving us. If the NDP were in power and you were a part of that government, would you support the NDP using the public money to fund advertising for itself?
You know, other than to show the public where certain new initiatives that they can reach out and go access, what's going on with this government is absolute fabrications. I mean, they're saying ads, and I'm sure some of their ads have been questioned and they had to tone them down because they changed. One ad says, the greatest country, greatest province in the world to work, and then it says in smaller writing, in food services and in retail and tourism. Well, those are seasonal jobs usually. They're the lowest paying jobs. So you're saying this is the best province in the world to live in, to work in the lowest paying jobs. I mean, it's a joke. And then if you read the real fine print on the bottom, when it talks about construction increasing and the economy improving, well, we're building the Olympics, for one thing, and plus many people are retiring. The statistics on youth employment, that trend, the 10-year trend that they're showing now, that's a trend that's been there since I remember using that at the Youth Advisory Committee in 1998. Showing the youth what the trend will be in 10 and 15 years. So this is nothing new, and it's certainly not created by the current Liberal government. These are just trends, and trends can change. The war in Iraq stops. There's $7 billion of money being generated in Washington State right now because of the war effort. The war in Iraq stops. Some of that money will cease. Some of that investment that's producing in Canada will cease. There are all sorts of variables that can change those statistics anytime, and they're predicting 210 and 215. That's just unacceptable to use taxpayers' dollars for that. Absolutely unacceptable.
Joyce Murray is big on the Safe Streets Act. What do you think about this act?
Well, actually, again, in 1998, the city of New Westminster brought in the anti-panhandling bylaw. It passed a vote of 6-1 with myself voting against it. Since we brought it in 1998, I spoke to the assistant police chief a couple of weeks ago. I don't believe he didn't believe that there have been any convictions under our anti-panhandling bylaw, which is fairly close to the Safe Streets Act. I talked to him about the aggressive panhandling, because that's what got everybody going, was the violent aggressive panhandling. And there are provisions of the criminal code that the police would use before they would use our bylaw. Our bylaw can be challenged by civil liberties. The criminal code, it's more difficult to challenge. So they would just use the criminal code or provisions for assault, for aggressive panhandling, that they can implement. And so I think it's just there to terrify people, make them think things are worse than they are. And the government's creating the problem with homelessness and with panhandling. And then to impose fine, well, the provincial government doesn't even impose a penalty. The city imposed a $2,000 fine for panhandling and breaking any of the provisions of the bylaw. Well, you have to panhandle pretty aggressively to come up with $2,000. So to me, it's just they're trying to create an issue and say that the NDP doesn't believe in safe streets. That's not true. We believe in safe streets, but we believe there's better ways of achieving that, and that's by providing for those people in need, the desperate people.
Is there anything that's important to you and that you would like to see done regarding your political vision for BC?
Well, you know, something that